it's Canzano. Thanks for making this podcast part of your day. Make sure you subscribe and leave us some feedback. Also, the podcast is brought to you by Multnomah Medical Clinic, dedicated to providing breakthrough, non-invasive, drug-free solutions to ED problems. Call Multnomah Medical Clinic at 503-899-4199 or visit them online at multnomahmedical.com.
Initialize sequence.
Welcome to The Baldcast, a production of John Canzano's Bald-Faced Truth.
Dave Bartu, the College Football Matrix. He specializes in scheduling, analytics, numbers. Numbers are his friends. I want to pull him on the show here to talk scheduling. I've talked about trying to protect the contenders in the North and the South Division with those cross-division games. Who knows what the Pac-12 will do, but it's what I would do. What would Dave Bartu do? College Football Matrix. What would you do, Dave Bartu?
What would I do? I'd simplify it. I think you're making it too big. Okay. You know, you're going Utah, Arizona State, Oregon, Washington, USC, Cal, Stanford, whatever. Dude, you just protect two teams. You're throwing dice here, right? Seven games? You got to go with your two best. To me, you go Oregon, you go USC. Okay? And I agree with you. You don't let them play each other, right? You want 2-7-0 teams going into that title game. All right? So, but it's not that simple. If it was simply winning football games, then the UCFs would get into playoffs, okay? The Boise States would get into playoffs. So you can't have a crap schedule. Here's where I disagree with you, all right? Don't protect everybody. You throw the dice, you protect your best two, the two with the decent chance. I'll tell you right now, Washington, I would not give them a chance. Not a top 25 recruiter, terrible offensive coordinator, new head coach. Stop talking about them playoff-wise. It doesn't exist. Same thing with Cal, new defensive coordinator, subpar talent compared to everybody else. Don't talk about them, okay? What you want Oregon, you want Cal, you want, or should I say Washington, you want Cal, you want Arizona State, you want Utah. You want those teams undefeated when they play USC and Oregon. So maybe, I didn't hear Rob's whole thing. Are they committed to North plus one? Is that exactly what's going to happen?
Yes, North will play one cross-division game. South,
cool.
Same.
That is stupid. That is stupid. This is COVID 2020. There are no rules. I think that's stupid. I think Oregon should be playing Utah and Arizona State, and USC should be playing Washington and Cal as a crossover, and you give the rest of their games are Oregon State, Washington State, Arizona, Colorado, all of that stuff. So, because what you're trying to do, you're trying to do two things when you're talking about the committee. A, you want to win all your football games. I get that. But B, you need quality wins. It can't be six crappy games or seven and a title game. You've got to have quality wins in there. So, to me, I stack it. If I'm Merton, I am stacking it for Oregon and USC only. I'm crossing them over with the best teams in the other division to give them a chance at getting top 25 wins. That is what's going to get you into the playoffs, possibly. And like you said before, all teams, margin of victory is critical. Everybody needs to blow the hell out of everybody else. So that's also a big part of it, but that's a lot of luck as well.
Now, Dave Bartu, the College Football Matrix, you consult with athletic departments. They've talked to you about basketball or football scheduling. You're right. You're first and foremost want to play games that you can win, but you're saying allowing them to cross over and get some quality wins is going to be paramount here. What else is on top of mind for you? If it's Oregon and USC that you're protecting, I guess you wouldn't get the conspiracy theorists out there because, you know, if you have Oregon crossing over and playing Utah, people are going to go, oh, Pac-12 didn't game that one, but you're saying there's some strategy in that.
There's exactly some strategy in that. You know, and every schedule is different. The first scheduling I worked on was a top 10 program in the Big Ten, and they were trying to resurrect their program, and they were deciding whether or not to do a home-and-home with LSU. And I said, absolutely not. And AD wanted the game because it's a big national televised game. I'm like, yeah, but you're trying to build a program to national title level. They're already at that talent level. Skip it. Get a W. And they skipped it. And LSU beat the crap out of Syracuse in back-to-back years. But the team that skipped it went 9-3 the year they were supposed to be at LSU. That would have been 8-4 and out of the top 25. Guess who got a ton of top 25 media run and catapulted their recruiting? So, yes, scheduling, there is absolute gamesmanship here. And if you're trying to protect six teams in a 12-team conference in seven games, I think that's the wrong direction. I think you've got to go with your two best shots, your best teams in your division, in each division. And even for Oregon, you're replacing five offensive linemen. You've got a new offensive coordinator, new quarterback. Really, kind of the bottom line is in the Pac-12, there ain't really nobody that's probably going to be playoff good this year. But if you're going to try to get them to 8-0 and into the playoffs, to me, it can't be 8-0 with seven cream puffs and beating USC. You got to find the top 25 and quality wins in there. And if the Pac-12 sat down and did it right, connected all of the dots, you can give the two best teams the best opportunity to rack up those top 25 wins, those quality wins, and still hope that they're undefeated playing each other in the Pac-12 title game.
Dave Bartu is the College Football Matrix. I love that. I love the strategy of that, because my inclination is to say, look, let's just take the three best and cross them over, and we get two undefeated teams in the end. But I had not considered trying to get a quality win, which they're going to need. What else should they be talking about to kind of muddy up the conversation from a PR standpoint? Are they saying, like, Herm Edwards coming out and saying, look, we have a disagreement even when we play 12. Of course we're going to have a disagreement if we're playing 7 and they play 8, 9, or 10. Is that smart for him to come out and start talking that stuff now?
I think it's stupid. I think he's just running his mouth. I don't care if it's Herm Edwards or anybody else. This whole, we need to make the Pac-12 look better. Why? The playoff, here's the thing. Let's rewind this a little bit. Everybody thinks the playoff committee uses a different set of rules to make their rankings every year. You are wrong. You are one. If you believe that, you are wrong. You are getting duped. The thing is they use the same numbers year in and year out. And why do I believe that? Because our model has been the most accurate model in determining their behavior from day one. Because Hancock gave us the rules when they rolled it out. They use the same rules. What changes, and John, you are very good at this, they change the narrative. The same thing. They just tell a different story, you know, and it's no different. If you gave me a set of numbers, let's say you gave me a spreadsheet on the Pac-12 and you said, tell me a story about what happened with the Pac-12. I can take those numbers and tell you a story. Then you could say, tell me a story I don't want to hear. I can take those same damn numbers and tell you a story you don't want to hear. Then I can tell you a story that you do want to hear. And I can make up story after story after story and change the narrative using the same numbers. So when people say, oh, we need to promote the Pac-12, we need to ad campaigns and market to get to sway the committee. There's no swaying the committee. It's as easy as a 3x5 card. You go to it, you add up the quality wins, you add up the top 25 wins, you add up the conference championship wins, you subtract out the losses, you look at the margin of victory, you look at the margin of loss. That is the playoff committee right there. So you can try to have as much fanfare, ads, promotion. You can send batteries out with Larry Scott's face on it, smiling, say, we're really good, don't believe the numbers. It's not going to work. It's really simple to me, being on the playoff committee, because they do the same thing every year. The only thing is they change the narrative that everybody chases.
Now, the story I want to hear is, I heard you went hunting in the last week. What's it like to be out hunting with Dave Bartu?
It sucked. That's what happened. It totally sucked. Man, I went out because I was bow hunting elk over on the east side, and I got some really good land I have access to. And if you've been elk hunting, it's the same thing as turkey hunting, except it's just multiply it times 50, 20-pound turkey, 1,000-pound elk, okay? So you're calling these things in close. I was there for 7 days. The first night, I got one bull to talk to me. I heard nothing for the next 84 miles I walked over the next week. Okay? The only thing I called in was a wolf and a cougar. So it was literally the worst elk hunting of all time for me. Little exciting on the predators, but it still sucked. So no elk for Dave, tag soup. Not a lot of, if you go with me, a lot of hiking. You better be prepared to hump over a lot of hills, cover a lot of territory. I only got really, really drunk on Crown Royal one night. Guy came into camp, started pouring, and I still got to bed by 9 and woke up not feeling so great. So other than that, a lot of hiking, and this year it would have been a lot of no bulls and a lot of swearing. But anybody that hunted with me would obviously, in my opinion, have a lot of fun because we'd go at it hard.
I feel like I was almost there, except without the Crown Royal. Dave Bartu, I appreciate you, man, being available on such short notice. We'll get you back on. Maybe get you back on after the schedule comes out. Would that be cool?
Dude, how about we can we call Merton? Let's call Merton right now. When I want to just free conference call him in. Hey, Merton, we got some ideas. Just hammer him. I can find his number. I make one phone call. I can find his number. No, seriously. I can call him. He'd be like, who the hell is this? And just hammer him. But no, in all seriousness, I do believe there is significant analytics that goes into the risk of making this schedule. And to me, there is an absolute right way. There is an absolute wrong way. And Rob Mullins being on the committee should absolutely be in that room helping the Pac-12 make that decision. I know he's not supposed to, but don't give me that. That's why this information is out there. It's a level playing field. So it'll be interesting. But just give me a call. I'm heading down 84 right now. I'm just outside outside of Boardman. And I guess it's just still hot as hell in Portland.
Nice and clear blue skies, though. We like that.
All right. Well, you thanks, got my
Dave.
Number, bro. You give me a call anytime.
All right, there he is, the College Football Matrix. All right, he says I'm making it too complicated. That's not surprising. He's saying protect Oregon and protect USC. And by the way, use Utah and Arizona State and use Washington and Cal to validate by having them play the crossover game against each other. That's an interesting concept. Leave it here. You got the BFT. Jason Brown, coach from Last Chance U on Netflix, will be making another appearance on this program. He's got a book. He's got a podcast. He's got a lot of opinions. He'll be on the show later in the week. Mark Harlan, Utah's athletic director, will be on Thursday. Martin Jarmon, UCLA's athletic director, will be on Friday. Patrick Chun, the athletic director at Washington State, will be on Friday. There's a chance Rick George at Colorado is showing up on Thursday. If not, he'll be on Monday. Jennifer Cohen, the athletic director at Washington, next week as well. It's like Shark Week, except the Sharks are ADs. That's what this radio show is doing. Anna has popped into the studio. Today is National Coffee Day. We were talking about it earlier in the show. You've turned to tea. To celebrate National Coffee Day, you've turned to tea.
To celebrate. I've stopped drinking coffee. Yeah.
There you go.
Uh-huh.
You're drinking that water that Adriana's drinking. It's like bath water.
Yeah, dirty water with some leaves in it.
It's kind of gross.
No, actually, I experimented because I was just tired every day, even though I was drinking coffee. So I'm like, well, obviously the coffee isn't doing anything for me. And on the days where I've been drinking this red tea, I actually feel more energetic. Maybe it's just in my mind. I'm sure it's just the placebo effect.
I'm going to pepper you with a variety of topics.
Okay.
The first one was National Coffee Day.
Yeah.
You say you've gone to tea. How about this as a theory, though? Is it possible that you're only seeking out coffee on days that you're tired? And so then you're mistaking that when you drink coffee, you feel tired because you're drinking coffee when you feel tired.
Because I'm tired every day. So, wrong answer.
Second question I'm peppering you with. Amazon. Oh, our friends at Amazon. They want you to pay with the wave of your hand. Basically, they'll use your palm print as a payment method in some of their stores. My friends at Amazon tell me this. I saw a story on this morning. Are you comfortable with your palm print being your method of payment? You just wave your hand over the scanner,
huh,
and it goes, oh, that's Anna.
Well, anything that they can do to make the purchasing process easier, right? Like,
Amazon, it's so hard right now.
Yeah, Amazon's like a frenemy. It's like, ah, it's just so easy. Like, you know, I almost feel guilty buying now sometimes from Amazon.
One of my favorite comedians, Sebastian Maniscalco, does a thing on Instagram TV where he says, what did my wife order from Amazon today? And he just opens the box.
Yeah.
And it's like, and yesterday there was one on there where it had like all this printing on the inside of the box.
Uh-huh.
And he was like, Amazon's got so much money. They're putting pictures on the inside of the box. Like, how much money do you have in order to go, let's just flex and do this?
Right.
Did you notice something on the doorstep today? Like, there was a speaker out there or a little device out there? What is that thing?
Yeah. Oh, I forgot to tell you about that. The gal that came over to do ballet and art last week with the girls left her speaker here. So she's coming.
I walked out there. There was a device out there. I thought, well, I'm not touching it. I'm calling the bomb squad.
Oh, my gosh. I'm sorry. I should have told you. It could be like perceived as suspicious looking.
And I like how we have a gal who comes over to do ballet as well.
Yeah.
Didn't she, didn't our young one almost leave her in tears?
Didn't almost leave her in tears, like put her in tears.
Alabama Adriana, pay attention to this story.
Oh, I already told her.
I'm
like,
informed.
There's a handful of people who could appreciate that because they know Soji. And yeah, our 4-year-old put someone, a grown woman, in tears.
How did that happen? Because I only heard the end of it. Like, what did she say to her? You know,
did she
go Hannibal Lecter on her or what?
Look, it was a Friday. It was supposed to be a Friday treat. You know, she was going to come over and do some ballet and art with the girls because COVID. We're not really ready to join art classes and ballet classes yet.
So you were doing like a treat for the girls.
Yeah.
You're bring over someone.
It's supposed to be the end of the week. Yeah. You got through school and here's your treat. Well, Soji decided that the ballet lesson was boring and
told the
communicated
lady.
That very directly to the lady.
So this poor gal, I like that you said gal. I don't get off to say that. This gal came over.
Yeah.
And Soji told her, you're boring.
You're boring.
This is
actually
boring.
The tonation. And then when the gal told her that hurt her feelings and she shouldn't say that, Soji proceeded to roll her eyes.
Should we do about that, Adriana? Alabama Adriana, what should we do? Do we high five Soji for expressing herself or do we say, Soji, you got to be nice to people who come over?
I relate to Soji on so many levels. When she told me that I was boring one time, I just told it to her right back, and it was fine. We kept it moving.
You know what? I don't think it's all that bad for her to be like, I'm bored, but she's got to learn that, like, you know, that's not a polite thing to say.
Time and place.
And she has a way of doing it that just cuts you off at the knees.
She's like, brutal.
I've been reading her a story one time, and she's like, Dad, you're boring. That's the worst criticism.
Well, and when she does it in front of the 6-year-old shouts what she learned last year from her kindergarten teacher, which is only boring people are bored.
Yeah. I don't agree with that. I do think sometimes, like, what if the ballet lesson really was boring? Maybe you should observe it and be like, oh, yeah, you're right. That was boring.
That's the whole point is I don't want to have to be around them for
Why are we doing ballet over here anyway? Put them to work. There's two dogs here, and there's only one human in this house that picks up after the dogs out there. So put them out in the yard with a shovel. There you go. Tell me when you're bored. Now tell me when you're bored.
That'll end well.
Put them in their ballet outfits and send them out there with a shovel. That'll do it.
You don't even know. You don't even know.
They'll be excited about it. All right. My next story, Patrick Mahomes' mom got upset during ESPN's Monday Night Football broadcast when analyst Lewis Riddick kept referring to her son as Pat, not Patrick. She tweeted, and he apologized on air for not getting his name right.
Okay.
What do you make of that? You kind of wrinkled your brow there. You furrowed your brow, so to speak.
Well, it's on the broadcaster to know the player's name and whether they prefer to be called by a particular name.
And his dad is Pat Mahomes, former major league pitcher.
Okay.
He's Patrick.
So they're trying to draw some distinction
Mom
from the dad
is.
As well. I mean, has Patrick, you know, do we know? Does Patrick have a preference?
But is it offensive to call Patrick Pat?
Names are funny.
People get weird.
Yeah.
Like,
I mean, no one calls you Johnny.
Some people call you Johnny, and you don't particularly like it. No, but Chip Kelly called me that.
Johnny.
Yeah.
Hey, Johnny.
You know, I don't mind it.
Let me tell you, Johnny.
Yeah, I don't mind that. But I also think, like, I have people call me JC. I have people call me names. Mm-hmm. You know? It's like, it's not like they were, like, defaming Patrick Mahomes on Monday Night Football.
Yeah.
But it's, I kind of feel like this is one of those things where if, like, if it were Patrick, you know, the left tackle that called Pat, there's nothing going to be said about it.
Mm-hmm.
But it's because it's the MVP of the Super Bowl.
Yeah.
And it's mom tweeting it.
Yeah.
You kind of, as the broadcaster, you kind of have to fall on the sword there. But I'm sure, like, after the broadcast went off, we're like, okay, mm-hmm. I get it. Do you really need to scold me publicly?
Yeah. Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, there may have been a different way to communicate that to
It's just kind of small.
You know, network.
It's like, you know what I mean? I don't want to, like, go after Patrick Mahomes' mother. Like, she's not fair game here. But I just thought, like, really? That's what you're worried about? You're watching your son out there? Just, can you send a note without tweeting about it? I don't know. You don't want to embarrass anybody.
You have said something interesting about names and nicknames, though, in the past that I thought was fascinating.
Yeah, I took a whole class on that.
Grown people that go by a funny name.
Well, I had a semantics class. Part is I was an English literature major, by the way.
Yeah. You know that? Which comes in real handy on Jeopardy.
But my...
Teen Jeopardy.
Yeah. I had this class on semantics, and we spent like a week on names,
mm-hmm.
why people go by what they go by. And we really did talk about grown-ups who go by like childlike names,
mm-hmm.
like a John who goes by Johnny.
Yeah.
And what is that really about for that person, and mm-hmm. why they want to be like, it's a youthful thing.
Mm-hmm.
If I walked around and I corrected people, don't call me John, call me Johnny.
Yeah.
I want to be Johnny. Like, you're essentially saying, view me as younger than I am. View me as, you know.
Interesting.
But I think here's the thing. Here's why it matters to mom. And I can tell you, based on taking that class, why mom's so upset.
Okay.
It's Patrick Mahomes, who is the son of Pat Mahomes, came up in the shadow of dad.
Right.
He was judged against dad his whole youth, his whole amateur career, even as a young professional. Incredibly important to Mama Bear that he is viewed as differently than dad.
Right.
As even though they named him the same damn name, like his birth certificate's probably Patrick and Patrick. They call dad Pat. Mm-hmm. They call him Patrick because that's what her son is.
Right.
So it's mom saying, see my son as the individual that he is, mm-hmm. and don't compare him to his dad, even though he grew up in the shadow of dad and we named him the same name as dad.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of silly.
Mm-hmm.
If you didn't want him to come confusion, they should have named him Sean.
Right. I wonder if that's sort
or
of
Manny.
That's kind of a thing that'll fall by the wayside over
Ron.
Time. You know, the people, the men that name their sons by the exact same name.
Judah.
And then you wind up with juniors and thirds.
I've been laughing this whole time, and then you throw in Judah with
how about
Ron?
This?
I mean,
how about this? How about fathers who have girls?
Yeah.
And then name the girl a derivative of the dad's name.
Yeah.
Because I have seen that.
Uh-huh.
I've done stories on people and I say, what are your children's names? And then I start to go down the list. And here's one that's interesting to me. Gabriel Sewell, who is Panay Sewell's father.
Mm-hmm.
I want to make sure I get this right. So he has obviously sons who play at Oregon and a son who will be headed to the NFL in Panay. And he's got a son who plays at Utah, and he's got kids, right? He's got mm-hmm. kids. Well, I was doing this story on Gabriel Sewell and his wife and their children, and I get to the point where I'm saying, hey, give me the kids' names. Well, dad's Gabriel, okay? Mm-hmm. Think about this. The oldest, the firstborn, was a girl. They named her Gabriella.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? That's a dad.
Yeah.
Who wanted Gabriel Jr.
Right.
And was fearful that he was never going to get another opportunity to name his kid. That's like George Foreman's kids, and Georgette. And you know.
No, he has sons that are all named George. They're like George Jr., the third, the fourth, the fifth.
Didn't you go to school with one of George Foreman's kids?
Yes, I went to school with Georgetta Foreman. Georgetta. Yeah.
There you go.
Speaking of names, can you imagine? I mean,
but
it'd be simple to call everybody for dinner. You just call one name.
George. Come on down.
All of you Georges.
But I thought about that when I talked to Gabriel Sewell. I said, what's your oldest name? Oh, Gabriella. I went, oh, that's kind of the girl version of Gabriel. And then we went down the list of the children. And of course, it was James, who ends up being the second. Oh, no, here's how it goes. His oldest is Gabriella. The second oldest is Gabriel. But they call him James because that's his middle name. So he named his first two children Gabriella and Gabriel, even though his name's Gabriel. And then but they called Gabriel James because that's his middle name. Then it was, all right, I got that out of my system. Nephi, Panay, and Noah. So it was like, as he was giving me the names, I smiled. I said, oh, your oldest, Gabriella. Your second, Gabriel, but we call him James. Okay. George Foreman here.
They got the legacy worked out, the first two kids.
We interrupt this broadcast with a special announcement from the Bald Face.
Hey, sorry to interrupt the podcast, but if you want to listen to more of the Bald Face Truth Radio Show, including more of this segment that you're listening to, make sure you subscribe on SoundCloud and iTunes to the Bald Face Truth Radio Show. Thanks for listening.